A63. Number 9A.
We stopped at the point of life, and the next break that Dudu sees as a break, as a new development, as a new step that cannot be explained through natural science, is what he called the transformation of man into an active, responsible individual. One can see that what he sees here, that suddenly somebody or something happened in the universe that now begins to rule the earth and to govern the earth, so to say, in place of God, in God's stead, that some, for the first time, something else intervenes into the development and evolution of the world, namely man intervenes, but he is asked now to act as an active, responsible individual. It is as if he would have said that the ideal of that stage would be the Christ man, who would act in at the place of God, that is, to him was given judgment of the universe, and therefore it would show that here is the point where man, as the ideal of God, would find its place. Dünner also said that at this place, really, the ideal became a leading factor, that people began to have an ideal, something that was above their own in their instincts, that they felt that through that ideal they would have dominion, they could win a victory over nature. For the first time, man was no more at the disgrace of nature, at the mercy of nature. Now he began to intervene and say, I make myself more and more independent of the negative influence of the world, and began to master his environment, began to master the food supply and everything, so that he had a sense of dominion and a sense of victory over all the evil forces of nature. He had a kind of human dignity. A civilization was born. Usually one says civilization was born around about 4000 BC. Some put it a bit earlier. That's a matter of taste. But you see, it's rather recent. And some think it hasn't yet started. And so he brings in here those qualities which we can say, we can symbolize it through the synonymous term truth. The last step is what he calls the existence of a telefinalistic plan, namely what Dubois-Raymond also was thinking, what is the purpose of the whole evolution, what's the aim of it, what is the good of it, where are we driving at, is there any sense in it, is there any purpose in it. And so Dünner could see that if he would follow all these various steps over 3 billion years, that he could see that there is always an ascending way, always a more purposeful way, perhaps always a way that had right from the beginning the goal programmed into the beginning. It was the beginning was, so to say, a goal causality, a causality which had already the whole plan programmed into the cause, so that there is a plan at work, what he calls a telefinalistic plan. Tele comes from far, like telephone, you know, tele, far. And telefinalistic to a far-off final state directed. That's telefinalistic. So he could see that everything is happening for the fulfillment of a creative act, and so we have those ideas that he uses, like telefinalistic plan, fulfillment, which we would call love. So in this way, I feel we see something very big, namely an evolution that has taken place without the aid of man, without being man conceived, without the brain of man that guided it, but a law in being, and therefore we can call this law of creativity an idea, a divine idea, which means that it is an idea which is conceived by the divine mind, and not a thought or a concept that was conceived by men, by humans. And in this way, we begin to feel that we can trust being, capital B. We can trust being, because being seems to have within itself the program of a telefinalistic goal, causality, so that we can trust that when mind begins to act in human consciousness, when mind begins to reveal itself as a little idea, as a little creative idea in mind, that we know that that creative action has within itself already the unfoldment of spirit, the identification of soul, the government of principle, the individualization of life, the dominion of truth, and the finality or fulfillment of love. And that is naturally something quite different than if we always feel that we are just like a cork on the wave in the ocean, thrown to and fro, and we don't know where we are going and what is happening, what is tomorrow. But when we feel that fundamentally there is a very specific creative law at work. And so, again, what I said this morning, the best we can do, the highest really we can do, is to culture within ourselves that law of the word, namely culture within ourselves, what does mind mean in the word? What does spirit mean in the world? What does soul mean in the world? Principle, life, truth, and love. And just culture that and culture that and culture that day after day without feeling, I have done it. I have done it. We have never done it. We are still on the way, and we have not reached the final goal, which is infinite. And so we can't culture this divine law of the world well enough. So I want to stress again the question. Now, is that evolution now a material evolution as it looks like, or is it a spiritual evolution? Outwardly, what Dunui presents, he shows a spirit, material evolution, because materially he starts out from that first possibility of a living cell, the first cause, and then showing the development from the of constant diversification and diversification up to man, so that from the human standpoint we could say, well, here we see a material evolution. Now, is it a material evolution? We could say, no, it is not a material evolution, because science cannot explain that matter works that way. But much more, we could say it is the very opposite, that it is actually a spiritual evolution, namely the intervening of those ideas of those synonymous terms, namely an evolution of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, having an impact on the material. Having an impact. See again, the Big Bang, having an impact on a completely different level, on a lower level. And therefore, what does that spiritual law of evolution do to the material level? It actually does not evolve matter, but does the very opposite. It takes away from matter its material connotation, step by step. It debunks, so to say, the claims of matter, and says to matter, you are not dead. You are not dead. There is no death. You are not dead. You have to yield to that fact that you are dead, that you are not bringing forth. You have to yield to the fact that there is life. And therefore, matter has to yield, so to say, its claim that it is always the same. It begins to say, no, there is diversification at the second step, there is infinite diversification, so matter has to give up its claim of being rigid, of not being able to evolve. And so right through, we have therefore a sense that what is seen, or what to the physical testimony is seen to be a material evolution, is actually matter giving up its claims, giving up the claims of restraint. I was always very much impressed by a biologist, a professor, who wrote a little book about nature and God, that he said, creation is the lifting of restraints on matter. So that evolution, every step forward, which seems to be evolution of matter, is actually freeing matter from its restraints. And matter has to give way to the spiritual evolution, to the possibility of spiritual evolution, so that the claims of matter can no more stand in the way of that spiritual evolution. I hope you can see what I mean. It's not easy to say or to explain it, but it is saying, well, matter isn't as dead as it seems to be. That matter says, I'm only material and I can't move, I have no movement, I have no creative source within me, I have no source of light within me, I cannot diversify myself, I cannot really think, and cannot be conscious, and I have no ethical ideas, and I have no consciousness. All that is what matter says. Matter says, I don't have that. And the spiritual idea comes and says, I take you away those claims, and if I have taken away all those claims, you are no more. You are no more anything, because you are only a build-up of claims. And if through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we take away the claims of matter, that they claim the very opposite of mind, the very opposite of spirit, the very opposite of soul, principle, life, truth, and love, matter disappears, so that what is called material evolution is the disappearance of matter. It's the very opposite. It's therefore a spiritual evolution. And I feel this is something we have to see clearly. Or we feel, well, you know, the natural scientist says, well, you look into nature, can't you see how beautiful nature is? Therefore, what a terrific principle must lie behind the whole nature, how it can diversify and rarefy things, how it can bring forth always higher and higher forms and so on, and therefore gives the impression, yes, there is some intelligence in matter, and that matter has that intelligence to bring forth higher and higher forms. Whereas we actually should see, no, it's the other way around. Because of the spiritual law of evolution. Matter has to give up its claim of being rigid. It gives up its restraint and therefore frees matter from being really restrictive and giving up all the various claims until it disappears. I always like that story of Alice in the Wonderland with the Cheshire Cat. That's a beautiful symbol. You have really a cat, good and proper, and first then the tail disappears, and then the legs disappear, and then the body disappears, and then finally the head disappears, and then it's only the grin left, and then the grin disappears. Always that seems to be quite a good symbol, so it's a fairy story or what, a children's story, has a very deep lesson that matter, the disappearance of matter is actually evolution. And not the building up or the unfoldment of matter is evolution, but the giving up of the material beliefs of matter is evolution.
Will nature disappear then, Mama?
Nature isn't something. You only have a concept of nature. And that concept of nature will certainly disappear. And you see how it can disappear. You see that first in your dreams, how it can disappear. And nature, you see, isn't something. It is a concept, and it's an ordering concept which we have in order to find our orientation in this universe. So what is nature? Nature are forms of matter, various forms of matter, and every physicist to date tells you that matter does not exist as what we believe matter is. Huh?
Well, Max Deneau says that the classifications in nature don't exist.
As such, yes. We classify them, yes. Yes, this is something perhaps that many students who love nature have difficulty, because it's actually so that nature can be beautiful, must not be beautiful. One only has to get into a real storm or into a flood or anything like that. One doesn't feel that nature is very beautiful and very loving. But the friends of nature, they just don't like to think that nature is not real, because they can go into nature, and I do that too. I like to go into the Alps and and do some nice walking in the mountains. It's one of the things I like most, really, because people feel here I find inspiration, or here I find this and that and the other. I don't find it there. I just get away from the noise. But it's then one feels that nature is a reality, this is an inspiring reality and so on. And I think each one of us has to face that, and face that it is it's material, sometimes beautiful but always erroneous, as the wording goes, and that we free ourselves from it. And actually, no one can see more beauty as if one closes one's eyes and is still in the heart. And then one sees beauties that transcend the material beauties, that transcend natural beauties. And one finds beauties that are far above nature. So one shouldn't moan too much that perhaps one day we hopefully arrive at that point where the limitations are taken off. Limitations of nature. I always think of people who don't like the sense that nature is not real. I think of those who have to live in slums, for instance. They don't feel that nature is beautiful. Or who have to live somewhere in an ugly place, not like we in Switzerland, with blue lakes and white snow-capped mountains and beautiful trees and yellow larches in the autumn, just one beauty. Huh? I just long always for that fortnight or those 2 weeks in October when the larches turn yellow. But if you live in another place where the nature is not so beautiful, I don't see why you should cling to nature. And so it's just a sense of finding one's true perspective to nature. And also, if you like nice nature and you don't have around you, just close your eye and figure it out. Just as real as if you look it with your if you grasp it with your eyes. There's no difference of seeing them mentally or with your eyes. You can figure out the most beautiful waterfalls and the landscapes and so on just by closing one's eyes and just lying there and just figuring out. It's not more real. So one has to be a bit strict with oneself and say, now let's get down to rock bottom reality. Is a material universe real or isn't it? And the physicist will tell you, he's the first one who will tell you that that material universe is not real. How they explain it today, you know, it's very difficult to grasp, and in 10 years they will still explain it a little bit more different, but they really reduce matter to energy and energy to waves and waves to fields of relationship until finally what is called matter is only a question of relationships. I think that's far as they go at the present moment. As you see how they dematerialize matter by analyzing matter. Yes, I think that's what we have to see. So, as a whole, you see, looking at evolution, we have to see that actually evolution or the law of creativity is fundamentally a divine idea. And a divine idea always works first out of itself. It is its own creator. We don't have to make an idea work. So we don't have to make a creative idea work. What we have to see is that mind constantly is at the point of expressing and manifesting itself, and mind reflecting all the other synonymous terms is constantly manifesting itself for the purpose of fulfilling itself. And this is big enough for us to realize. And therefore also we begin to see that this is not only true in the history of evolution, but that it is also true in the history of philosophical ideas. I put expressly that term philosophical before idea in order to bring out that really the same creative idea that is at work in the material evolution is also at work in the philosophical realm. That it is always God or mind, divine mind, that is, so to say, responsible for the evolution in civilization in the philosophical realm. And we know very well that this is today also recognized. Though it was for a long time not seen, for a long time the philosophers felt that man is conceiving new ideas, that therefore man's thinking is the creative source, and that man can start to think in new lines, and therefore have new ideas and new concepts. Whereas today, the thinkers like Heidegger and so on, the modern thinkers, they begin to see that this is not true. That, like with material evolution, so also in the mental evolution, it is so that the divine idea has its impact on human thinking, and human thinking has to give way, just as matter had to give way. That human thinking has to give way to the divine idea, to the clear concept of idea. And wherever a divine idea finds a, transparent consciousness, it will shine through, and then it appears as if that person through which it shines has conceived of a new idea. But actually, that is not so. It is so that we can see that the idea is conceiving the thinker. So that it is really the idea that thinks the thinker, and not the thinker that thinks an idea. And we have to see that very clearly. If we do that, you see, then we can also see that we can really be a transparent consciousness for new revelation. Because humanly we would say, who am I that I would be able to conceive of something new, to be a revelator, to be a discoverer, to see something, drastically new? Who am I? Everybody says to himself, I am just a little pebble on the beach, I am not a real genius, I am not built that way, so I will never be able to have big new ideas. But if we can see that actually the creative law is the other way around, that it is always the divine mind that translates itself to our consciousness, and that it's the divine mind that brings to us a new idea, all what we have therefore to do is to be open for the divine mind.